In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Let's all go to the lobby.
You know, I mean, there's no Main Edge, but I just, it's the only chance we get to hear Pat Speckhard's voice on the show, so I like leaving it on there.
Right? No, absolutely. You know, there are certain traditions that transcend
right.
the mere goings on of everyday life. So it's great keeping it around.
Alan Adams here in studio to talk movies and more. First off, we were chatting during the break. You were not with us last week with good reason. You were with some old buds doing Vegas. How was that?
Well, I mean, like when you say it like that, it sounds like a whole thing. we're all gentlemen of a certain age at this point. But it was really nice. We had the opportunity to just there was a weekend that everyone was able to be available, and it was just we rented a suite with an adjoining room at the Venetian and
got the early bird special.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. Like, it was being in our, being middle-aged fellas, in many ways, Vegas has something for everybody.
Right.
As we are not young people anymore, certain aspects of the Vegas experience, we could have done.
Right.
But instead we're like, that looks exhausting. let's go eat dinner somewhere nice. So it was great. I mean, the reality is, like, the majority of our time there revolved around food experiences.
As well it should.
You know? And my big thing that I put out there was, look, I just want to go to a restaurant that is owned and operated by a chef I've seen on television. Like, that's what I want to do.
Sure.
The fellas really stepped up because... our first night there, we dined at Momofuku, which is David Chang's restaurant, which was delightful. On Saturday night, we went to Roy Choi's Best Friend,
ooh,
which I'll tell you, Rich, is in the conversation for best dining experience I've ever had.
Wow. Very nice.
And in between, we went to Guy Fieri's Kitchen Bar and Grill for lunch.
I love it.
It was Momofuku was great. As I said, Best Friend was phenomenal. Flavortown, it was, it's one of those things where, like, I'm almost glad it was as bad as it was because it's a better story.
Well, yes,
like,
of course.
if it's just like shoulder shruggy, it's like, whatever. But it was actively bad. like it gross in some places, what I mean? Obviously you order something called trash can nachos, like your expectations are tempered somewhat.
Sure.
But you don't want it to actually taste like it came out of a trash can.
Guy
did not do us any favors, for our dinners, we did chef's menus both times. So it was just wave after wave of delicious food would just come out. And like at Momofuku, there was basically just like a lazy Susan in the middle of our round table, and you're just like spinning it around and getting all this stuff. And at Best Friend, the food was great. Like, they had a wonderful variety of different types of things. Just like a ribeye to die for, a Korean fried chicken where the secret ingredient was the flavor packet from a package of ramen noodles, which had never even occurred to me before, and it was so delicious. And then just a little, a cherry on the sundae of the Best Friend experience. We're sitting there and we've got this wonderful table. It's right by the kitchen. And the flames are like coming up behind us. And we're also near the door that goes to, I don't know, wherever else the restaurant goes. There's this weird, mysterious door that says, and over the top of it, it's written down the rabbit hole. And we're like, oh, what's it? And so we're sitting there and we're eating, we're chatting, we're having a great time. And I kind of look over. And I'm like, Rich, it was Nancy Silverton. Nancy Silverton was in the building.
Wow.
Clearly trying to be incognito.
Oh, sure.
And at one point she caught me knowing who she was. Oh, yeah. Didn't seem super psyched about it.
No. Did you do the nod? Like, I'll be cool.
I was very cool about it. You know, I did turn to one of our party and I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Nancy Silverton. Like, you know, try not to be a big, he's like, oh God. Yeah. That totally. He's like, do you think that means Roy Choi's here? And I'm like, yeah, it probably does. Yeah. So, you know, we fanboyed out a little bit, but not like we didn't like address her. Right. Like, it's, you know, she's clearly there for a reason. Yeah. So it's like, we don't want to be, but I did, at the end of the meal when I spoke to our waiter, and I was just like, so just between you and me, is that, did I clock Nancy Silverton over there? And his very diplomatic response was, I can neither confirm nor deny.
Thank you. You just did.
And I'm like, yep, that's exactly how it should go. Mm-hmm, right. But yeah, other than that, you know, did a fair amount of like seeing the sights, went to Fremont Street, did that, you know, sort of walked the strip a little bit.
Yeah. Gamble a little bit?
Gambled a fair, like spent a lot of time gambling, but we all managed to, like nobody like, you know, hit the jackpot or whatever. But we also all still have homes and families. So you have to consider that a pretty big win. And I had my first Topgolf experience. I don't know if you're familiar with Topgolf.
I'm not. Please tell me more.
It's basically like, I don't know, like a driving range on steroids. Like it's so it's like four levels. And so like you're basically driving out into the space, but they have like targets set up and like computerized scoring. So it's very gamified. And it's the sort of thing that can be enjoyable regardless of your skill level when it comes to golf. So that was super fun. And played a lot of blackjack, learned how craps works.
That scares me. That always scares me. I don't know. No.
It's like, I know about like, it's like, oh, you throw the dice, but then you look at the table and it's like, it's like a GD murder board. Like, right. It's like, you might as well just connect all these spaces with red thread. Cause I don't understand what's happening.
No.
But I was, I got the very, it's like, just bet the pass line, And, you know, and it, you'll hang out there for a while. And then sometimes you'll get more money and sometimes you won't. Yeah, and so I managed to, you know, you kill like 90 minutes, and it's like, I mean, I think I lost like $25
over the course of,
yeah, you know, and
that's,
you know,
cheap entertainment,
you know, and drinks are coming.
Yeah,
but it was funny. One of the things, one of the mantras that sort of came up early, it was really like I'd never thought about it this way, but it was a really, really healthy way to view it. I think, when it comes to gambling, you're not losing money, you're spending money.
Yes.
You know, it's like you're
it's entertainment.
You're paying for your entertainment. Mm-hmm. And once that sort of switch flipped, it's like, oh, okay. So, I mean, whatever, like it doesn't, you know, as long as you're, you know, and I was very responsible with regard to the assets that I brought along with me.
Because as long as you don't be like, I'm out of money. Wait, do you have an ATM? No, don't do that.
I literally didn't even bring an ATM card. Like it was just, I'm just like, nope. I have this amount of cash that I can use for gambling. I will use this one singular credit card for all other like food, beverage, you know, transportation purchases, and that's it.
Well done, sir. Yeah,
and I think and everyone handled themselves very well. And added bonus, our suite had a magnificent view of the Sphere. I don't know if you're familiar with the Sphere.
Oh yes, I've seen the pictures.
And so
it's pretty impressive.
So both nights at around 11 o'clock, we would sit in our suite in front of the big floor to ceiling windows and just watch the Sphere for a little while.
Cool.
And it was it's pretty impressive. Mm. It's really pretty impressive.
Very nice.
So yeah, and then came back. It was a whirlwind 48 hours, but excellent. But definitely a great time.
Have you seen any movies?
I did.
Oh,
I did. I've seen a couple of things.
Please share.
Well, we'll start. I'm just going to mention these. We're not going to talk about them at any real length, but just to recommend to people. My dear friend Wes Anderson has adapted and directed a number of Roald Dahl short stories into short films for Netflix. There's four of them all told. Mm. I've seen two first so far. The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar and The Swan are the two that I've seen. But there are two more. Henry Sugar's like 40 minutes long. The other three are like 17 apiece. Like they're super short. And they are very Wes Anderson-y in all the best ways. So, again, can't recommend them highly enough. And honestly, like, once I've seen the other two, I'll probably talk about them again next time we're on.
All right.
As far as, like, full-on movies, we've got two. I did get to the movie theater this weekend.
Excellent.
To see the new Gareth Edwards sci-fi spectacular, The Creator. And then on Netflix, there's a really good sort of crime thriller type movie, murder mystery almost, called Reptile, starring Benicio del Toro. So we can talk about either one of those.
Well, let's hear about that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, we watched it last night. I didn't think it was supposed to release until next weekend. So I was really pleasantly surprised to see that it was available to watch. But yeah, it's a small town. I believe it's either upstate New York or Pennsylvania. It's unclear. The town is called Scarborough. But we have a small town police department led by this sort of mysterious detective played by Benicio del Toro, who has arrived in Scarborough at the behest of his wife, played by Alicia Silverstone. He apparently had some struggles in Philadelphia, and so has moved to the smaller town to sort of calm things down. And he gets a job on the police force thanks to his wife's uncle, Alan, played by Eric Bogosian, who's nice. It's always great to see Eric Bogosian. Basically what we have is there's a realtor in town who is getting ready to show a house is brutally and horribly murdered. The initial primary suspect is the partner, played by Justin Timberlake.
Whoa.
Who's here? JT action. Then we sort of watch, and it's one of those movies where, like, they really sort of parcel out the info, so I don't want to go too far down that route as far as, like, talking about the plot machinations and whatnot. But suffice to say, like, we move around in time a little bit, and it becomes very clear very quickly that there are a lot of secrets in this town. Many of those secrets are interconnected in ways that our man Benicio del Toro is not prepared to discover. And we go from there. But yeah, it's a really interesting movie in that it takes its time in a way that you don't necessarily see in movie. And it's weird to say that in a world where, like, you know, 3-hour movies are kind of becoming the norm and whatnot. And this one runs, I think the runtime was right around like 2:15, give or take. But it never, the pacing never felt slow. But it's one of those movies that, like I said, takes its time in parceling out the information that it gives to the viewer. And so it's almost like we're kind of learning how this case is developing in real time. Whereas the temptation with these sorts of movies a lot of times is to give the audience more information than the characters have. And then that can work, obviously. You look back at, like, legendary detective shows like Columbo and stuff like that. That was sort of the way they operated. It was kind of nice to feel like you were sort of part of the mystery and just feel pieces sort of, it's like, oh, I bet that guy did it. Oh, but what if that guy did it? Oh man, we didn't even think about her, you know, and it just keep going, like, you keep going down that sort of rabbit hole. I will say, things get a little tangled at certain points, it gets a little more convoluted than I think it needs to be. But in the end, it unties every knot that it needs to untie and sort of lands us in the place that we need to land. So Reptile. It was certainly a good time. Good time's not necessarily the right word, a really engaging sort of movie. And honestly, like, as far as, like, especially as far as, like, Netflix offerings go, like pretty well executed.
Excellent. All right. How about The Creator?
Man, I was really excited about this movie. I ride pretty hard for sci-fi films. Like, that's my deal. But the truth is, a lot of science fiction, particularly like high end, like big budget sort of like sci-fi spectacle, like it's so intertwined with IP and franchises and all that stuff that it's so rare to come across a standalone type movie in that genre. Like, you know, we spent, you know, we spent $80 million on this movie that isn't based on a comic book, and it's, you know, it doesn't have a number at the end of it. Like, it just is. It's own story being told in its own way. And so I'm always rooting for movies like this, because the only way we keep getting these is if people go see them.
Right.
Unfortunately, it does not seem like the creator did super well at the box office this weekend, which is too bad. But I mean, again, it's not their fault that Paw Patrol came out the same weekend. You know, like it's Paw Patrol, and apparently they have superpowers. So it's like, yeah, you're like that's a tough beat for the creator.
I saw the trailer for that. God, like you didn't think they could make Paw Patrol worse. And yet they did.
As someone who does not have any young children in his life, I'm not super familiar with the Paw Patrol, but
and you don't ever want to be.
I can you know, contextually, I can figure it out.
Oh yeah.
But the creator is it's written and directed by Gareth Edwards. He's done a couple of big franchise movies. He did the recent Godzilla remake. But he's best known for his low-budget indie debut, a movie called Monsters, that if you haven't seen, I can't recommend highly enough. Like, you should definitely check it out. But yeah, so the creator is set in, roughly 40-ish years from now, so relatively near future. But it's a slightly alternate world in which robotics technology and specifically artificial intelligence has developed at a faster rate than it has here in our world. And so there is the framing device, the sort of intro is really ingenious. They basically do a newsreel. And so you walk through like these various newsreels as it's like, here's the first robot, and here are some things that can do. It's like a box with like little arms, and then it just sort of progresses until you're looking at like what they call simulants, which are basically AI powered robots that look like people for the most part. Like they are designed specifically to look different enough so that you can tell, because apparently these folks have seen movies, but they haven't seen enough movies because, well, the inciting action of what leads to the rest of the movie is, the AI rebel and execute an attack on humanity. And before you know it, AI has been outlawed in the Western Hemisphere. And all AIs have sort of begun conglomerating in the ill-defined area known as New Asia. That's where they're sort of like holding up to make their last stand. And that's where we're sort of dropped in. And we have a sort of retired special forces type guy played by John David Washington, who's excellent. Mm. These are the sorts of movies that he should be making. And I hope he continues to do so. I don't think he quite has his dad's chops. I mean, there's no sin in that.
No.
Like when your dad's Denzel, it's like, okay, well, if you're going to be an actor, like just get ready for comparisons, because that's just going to happen. But for like this kind of film, like he's really good. Like he's a very good physical actor. So it's nice to see him doing this sort of thoughtful action type stuff. Anyway, so he's enlisted he's first dropped in deep undercover because he's tasked with finding the person who invented AI, or like the leader of the AI folks. The government sends the troops in too quickly. He's not able to get the information that he needs. Tragedy strikes. We jump forward a few years and he's reenlisted because it's like, well, we think we might know where they are. You need to go and get this sort of AI super weapon and destroy it before it destroys us. And he goes on the mission. He crosses the globe, tracks down the laboratory where the weapon has been developed, and then discovers that the weapon is not an it.
Oh,
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So it's and again, I'm not like if you've seen the trailers, you probably know the gist, but I'm not gonna be the one who spoils it for you. But what follows is basically we watch this guy as he comes to terms with the idea that you know, these artificially intelligent beings are just that. They are aware, you know, they have agency, they have self-determinism, and, you know, and then we start getting into some pretty thorny existential questions with regard to, well, when, you know, at what point does a person become a person? Like, what makes a living thing a living thing? Wow. Like, you know, because, you know, you argue, oh, well, these robots were made. Well, we're all made. Like, it's just a question of, you know, you're just arguing semantics at that point. So, you know, like a little headier than maybe a lot of the more recent sci-fi blockbusters have been. Not like, you know, and there's a very throwback vibe to it in terms of the ideas, like, because we've talked about this before, like sci-fi, horror, like genre film has always been a wonderful place to explore sort of deeper ideas in a more palatable form for the masses. I will say a film where whether intentionally or not, we are led to empathize more with artificial intelligence than people coming out right now.
Yeah.
Feels a little weird. Like, I can't, like, obviously they can't have planned that because, you know, it's been years, you know, movies like this are years in the making, but the idea that, you know, the writer's strike had just ended, you know, with the idea of artificial intelligence being such a bone of contention. And now we have this movie coming out where it's like, actually, AI is the good guys and we're the baddies. All that being said, absolutely beautiful movie to look at. Like, just the visual effects work. It looks like it cost four times as much to make.
Oh, good.
Than it did. Like, all the effects work, the AI, the simulants and the robots and all that stuff, they all look great. Wonderful sort of, like, you know, futuristic landscapes and massive, like, spaceships and, you know, firefights. Like, it all works.
So see it in the theater if you can.
I think so. Yeah. Like, it's the sort of movie that I think will reward that. You know, you're watching it at home, like, it's probably going to be a little bit more of an intellectual exercise. And not that that's a bad thing, but, like, in terms of the sheer spectacle, like, seeing it on a big screen, I think will go a long way towards really enhancing your enjoyment of the experience. I'll tell you, like, I saw it at like 9:30 at night, and I don't usually do movies that late. I did not doze off once.
Good.
You know what I mean? And I'm like, as we discussed, I'm an old man now, and the fact that I did not drift off tells you a lot. Tells you volumes about just how good a movie the creator is.
And not say you're an old man because I know how much older I am than you.
Well, we can all, at a certain point, it's just, there's just young and then old.
Yeah.
And once you cross that line, it's all the same.
There you go. Lumped right in together. Thank you, Alan. Good to see you. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Alan Adams talking movies on Pass the Popcorn here on Downtown. We're about 20 minutes before 6 o'clock. We'll come back with the good, the bad, and the ugly up next.
Sweats Tire is a family-owned business serving the community since 1966 with a wide variety of tires and automotive repair you can depend on. Generations of customers have counted on them to help make the best decisions for all their vehicles.